Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. Joining us, Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University. He's also the former NOPD chief, as well as the former head of the Washington State Police and the former chief of police in Nashville. So he brings a wide breadth and depth of experience at multiple levels relative to law enforcement, and we appreciate same. And Ronnie, thank you for joining us this morning, and Happy New Year to you.
Good morning, Neil. Happy New Year to you and yours as well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Ronnie, 2021 was a rough year, and we're going into 2022. Council comes into office next week. Your thoughts about anything changing as we make this transition to new governance, and what do you think is we hold on the horizon here in the city of New Orleans?
Well, I think, you know, the bad news is 2021 was worse than 2020. I think we're well past the point of saying that the 10 biggest cities in America's, 10 large cities in America had record-breaking murder years last year. New Orleans wasn't one of them, but certainly had another year of increase. In the last year, 412. In the last 2 years, there were 412 calls for murders, 908 calls for non-fatal shootings. Together, that's 1,300 calls. And when you add carjacking, someone stuck a gun in your face and took your car from you in the last 2 years, is more than 521 calls. So there's a new council. The mayor is the same. Less than 30% of the voters voted. Chief Ferguson and the men and women of the NOPD are like a football team that are playing against an opponent with 11 players, and they only got nine. And the ownership, the mayor, and the stockholders, the council, are allowing that to happen. So hopefully someone such as Oliver Thomas, who was a council member when I was the deputy chief, who got it, all right? I'm not politicking for anybody here, but let me tell you, OT understood what we had to do to constitutionally protect the citizens of New Orleans who were victimized. Maybe there'll be some fire in the council. It's obvious the mayor is satisfied. She hasn't made no changes to the structure of how the NOPD is going to function. And this isn't a criticism. It's just an observation, right? If science can't be questioned, it's not science. It's just opinion. And if we can't question the staffing of the NOPD, the delivery of service, and the unrelenting increases in victims of violent crime, then what can we question?
Yeah, I mean, I just have – there's no sense of urgency or exigency. I don't – you know, we're hearing from – I never thought ever I would agree with London Breed. I never thought ever that I would agree with the Chicago mayor. And others, but I find that I have, and it's been more than words. They're putting it in action, but there's nothing going on here.
And you look around the nation. That's an excellent point, because you look around the nation. Look, politics is what it is, and it can be what it is. When politics is for the sake of politics, it's a sport that the players know the game, right? But when politics infuses itself into education or infuses itself into crime fighting, it tends to not be as clear of what the ground rules are. So in the case of London Breed, in the case of Keisha Lance Bottoms in Atlanta, Lori Lightfoot, who I used to give speeches with, I know Lori fairly well, they made decisions to defund their police department, lack for a better term, create a better term. They just stopped funding their police department. And now all of a sudden, you know, what did our old grandparents say? Chickens come home to roost, and yeah. Men and women in their cities are dying. It's not even – I even made too much light of that, right? No, you and I have been to funerals. You and I have been to mass shootings. It's terrible to see the death and destruction in New Orleans. And, you know, I take my hat off to Sean. What a fight he's in, right? He's not only does he have one hand tied behind his back, he's got two hands tied behind his back, and he's got one shoe and the other foot's bare. And who's helping him? Where's the mayor? Where's the council? Who's helping him?
You know, I made the observation the other day as well in my interview with Michael Heck. I remember you were around then when the New Orleans Police and Justice Foundation, the business community, got really involved and kind of rallied around, you know, changing the culture and trying to improve upon the assets and resources available to the New Orleans Police Department. I don't see much of that anymore either.
No, look at how much influence the Police Foundation had. Audubon Zoo announced a celebration for the police department. The Audubon Zoo got emails from people from outside of Louisiana. They canceled the celebration of police officers, and then they decided to have it again. What message did that send to the cops?
Yeah.
I mean, you're a sheriff. I was a chief. What do you think they thought about that? I mean, so I would also suggest to you this. I think there's been a paralysis because of two really good points of view that have been put into a prison of two ideas. You're either for criminal justice reform or you're for fighting violent crime. You can't be both. That's not true. You and I have talked endlessly about bail bond reform for nonviolent offenders, regulatory crimes such as driver's license, not payments, not resulting in people who can't pay going to jail. That has nothing to do with murder, non-fatal shootings, rape, robberies, and carjackings. But all we ever hear about is reforming criminal justice system for those who are brought into it because of behavior, which I kind of get, but nobody talks about victims anymore. Where's the victims in all of this? The people whose life has changed forever when someone put a gun to their head and took their car, right? Newell, you and I used to talk about this, I bet you, the same way. Don't think of carjacking as simply a car was stolen, right? That's just an auto. No, this was a personal violent behavior in your face with oftentimes your children in your car.
Right. And oftentimes begging.
That's just that they took the car.
Oftentimes begging for your life, right?
That's a scary thing. And I get that people in jail shouldn't be there if they haven't been treated fairly. But where are the victims in this debate?
How much of this cancel culture do you believe has infiltrated this, where people just are afraid to step up and stand up for almost anything any longer?
You have to be a very special person to agree to be a police officer in any time. You and I had troubles with recruitment and retention all of our careers because the number of people who want to be officers is smaller than the population, and the ones that you want are even smaller, right?
Right.
Well, the last 3 years, they've been lionized, right? I have family members who are still police officers who feel like many officers, which is, I don't support officers breaking the law, but does anybody support me for following the law? That's the officer's mindset in many communities today, and that is not a winning combination.
No, not at all, because, we have an obligation to manage and massage the public trust carefully, right? I mean, it's always a delicate balance, but it's always been a two-way street. And in many respects, it's become a one-way.
I'm glad you said it that way, because it reminds me of this. When you and I were young leaders and people were confronting the concept of community policing, I think me and you and many intimately immediately saw, wait, if we build people's confidence, they'll share more information. We can arrest more bad people who have hurt people, right? I mean, that's really the ratio. That's the relationship.
Well, that's community policing. Right?
But guess what the people who – it's exactly what it is. Guess what the people who wrote community policing theory said and warned us in 1994? Fonnie Bucaro and Robert Trojanowicz is the people who created community policing. Trojanowicz said this, and I never forgot it, 1994 – Be aware of the self-appointed community leader versus the real community leader.
Right.
And I carried that with me my entire time as chief, and I'm sure you did as sheriff, because people who appoint themselves as leaders not always actually are what the people who naturally lead want. And I think we're getting too much of appointed leaders, self-appointed leaders, as opposed to go knock on somebody's door in Broadmoor and say, are you satisfied with the carjackings going on in Broadmoor or Littlewoods? Are you satisfied that another generation of children are being shot down callously and carelessly? Are you satisfied versus the person who finds himself on television? Big difference.
And with the social networks that are out there now, you know, there's so many ways to gather people to follow a mindset, a soundbite or otherwise.
Well, you know what's fascinating is the data is now about a year and a half old, but it was the same for 3 years before that. Twitter, 90% of Twitter traffic is driven by 10% of Twitter users.
Right.
It is the biggest echo chamber in the history of Earth. So I don't care what's happening on Twitter. People who use Twitter to exchange, you know, professional information with one another, that's wonderful. But 90% of the traffic is driven by 10% of the users. And it's hard to believe that sophisticated political machines would be concerned about that kind of a relationship, but maybe they are. I don't know.
Well, it's all about the clicks, and unfortunately, it's not about the lives, and it's not about the anguish that victims are dealing with out on the streets. My big concern is that, and you and I have talked about this, you were in the midst of it during the Landrieu administration. We had a 2-year hiring hiatus. We've still not recovered. Three-year hiring hiatus, even worse yet. And how anybody ever thought that we could recover from that is beyond me. But we haven't, and we still haven't. And we got many years to go in order to do so, yet still. So when we talk about 2022, it's, you know, this is just a first step on a long journey, right?
And you can see it around the nation, some administrations and councils, because, Newell, we got to make sure for the audience, a mayor is only as powerful in the budget, which is the moral document of the city, as the council is willing to approve, right?
Right. But, absolutely.
So many mayors and councils decided that cutting back on police staffing during the budget crisis of 2008 and 2009 had to be done. A lot of police chiefs, myself included, argued, we agree. But the turnaround time on recruitment, training is so long that if we don't continually hire, we will get behind. Mayor Purcell, in the midst of a dramatic budget crisis in Nashville, agreed with our logic and we kept hiring. Mayor Dean, Mayor Landrieu took a different choice. That was his choice. But you and I know this. You don't open up the floodgates on January 1st and say, I'm going to hire 100 cops and get 100 cops by January 30th. It takes almost a whole year, not to include whomever you may lose as a natural part of retirement, resignations, and termination. It's, you can't get behind. I guess that was a short story to that long point. Cities that let themselves get behind can hardly ever catch back up.
But one of the ways that you do so is you look internally first as to try and figure out where there are opportunities for efficiencies in the manner, operationally, mm-hmm. that is, in the manner in which one is conducting themselves. Has that truly been done? I mean, going back to your time, we had outside experts, you know, come in, assess over and over and over again, and there's been little or no implementation.
Well, it's a very interesting point you raised, because we went through a series of generations. We went through a generation where we streamlined the top of the organization. We reduced the numbers of deputy chiefs so we could have better control. That all happened. But you know what happened in Detroit maybe 8-9 years ago? They said, we have 13 or 14 precincts. We just can't afford that anymore. We have 7 now, because that cuts out all that overhead, right?
Right.
A captain, a lieutenant, staffing, electric bill, gas bill, property. The NOPD, as much as I love the NOPD, maybe can't afford 8 districts anymore. And the infrastructure that's needed to support 8 districts on the administrative side of the question, that's a dramatic realignment of thinking that might have to occur, because if you're not going to get past 1,100 people, do you still need 8 districts where you have all the administrative overhead? See what I'm saying? And, yeah. And Detroit had to do it. It was painful for Detroit. I think they went from 13 or 14 precincts down to 7 or 8. But something's different got to happen. And if you and I were still in charge, we may have ideas, but something's got to happen.
It's something that has worked well for the JPSO. We've had 4 districts, 2 on the east, 2 on the west.
And a whole lot more geography.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's worked well. For us, because we've been able to keep those administrative costs down in so doing. And obviously, you know, we went about building. We used to beg, borrow, and take, you know, district stations. And then we finally decided, well, this is stupid. We're spending more we're spending bad money,
right.
You know, good money on a bad idea. And we decided to finally build district stations, right? We were in shopping centers. We were in old buildings.
Right. Absolutely.
And we went, we set out and did that. But we've been able to stay nimble because we didn't have all of that administrative overhead to deal with day in and day out.
And it's complex in civil service departments. So when I was the chief in Nashville, I made a proposal. The mayor supported me, and we reduced the footprint of civil service assistant chiefs and all the costs that went with them. And we reverted those people, and it was painful, and nobody enjoyed doing it. But we reverted those assistant chief civil servants to captains, where they were before they got appointed. And it was painful. But we couldn't afford to have five assistant chiefs who all needed assistance, who all needed cars, who all needed offices, who all needed something to do. So in New Orleans, if the civil service rules, I think, may provide, it would be taking a little bit of search. Maybe you can't afford 16 command positions anymore that hold captains. It's sad, but the citizens who are the victims of robbery, rape, murder, and assault, a lot of things are sad for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing with all these drivers that both the mayor and the council and everybody has. Why wouldn't it be retired individuals? Why would we have to have active post-certified folks when we have a shortage of those?
Well, you saw as well as I did, the Times-Picayune will occasionally take a shot in the dark and say, there's no other city in America, and I'm paraphrasing them, there's no other city in America of this size that has a full-time council with a full-time security staff, with a full-time car. Like New Orleans is just like, remember, we used to have two sheriffs. It's just like these are bygone ways of thinking. And, if you're going to really reorient yourself, we moved against five assistant civil service chiefs, not out of animus, but because we had to provide better service, and it was painful, but we got it done.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as though that there should be this shock and awe mentality right now about, you know, being disruptive and looking at things and just really thinking out of the box in order to get financially healthy again and to better utilize the assets, especially the human capital that you have within the organization.
Absolutely. And New Orleans is even more confounded because some of the existing police facilities are old and outdated and were never really the proper facility to begin with. So we have a couple newer facilities that came during and right after my time. But it goes back to your point, and we used to do that as well in New Orleans and Nashville and the Washington State Police. We'd show up in buildings where somebody would give us some free space.
Yeah.
And it turned out that wasn't the way to decide where to put people. And putting people in old buildings that have lost their usefulness is another way that doesn't make any sense. So maybe a realignment of districts and assignments is something New Orleans, like many other big cities, is going to have to confront to live with the reality of 1,100 people, period. Yeah.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We are back. We're visiting with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University. Ron, we've been dealing with these issues of over-criminalization, disproportionate impact, all kinds of issues, and all things that we actually should be mindful of and monitor. But how much of that, when you think about it and we look at like organizations like NOPD and others that are not doing much as it relates to proactive policing and only doing reactive. They don't choose their perps, and they're not choosing their victims.
And they don't choose what the victims describe as the conditions of their crime. And, you know, we have a lot of research that looks at that. And for decades, we've been told by sociologists, and the evidence still continues to be clear, that violent crime is most likely to be intra-racial, meaning between people of the same race. When we look at crimes that are more regulatory in nature, driver's license, insurance, all those things are very important. But the disproportionate impact on people of color is clear. I mean, it is what it is, and we should be thinking about that. And we should be figuring out if someone who can't pay, as the Supreme Court said, we're not a debtor's nation. If you cannot pay, you're not going to go to jail. But if you're refusing to pay, that's a different story. But Newell, when it comes to people committing acts of violence against one another, it's not an issue of race or disproportionality. It's an issue of John Smith was robbed, and he described the person who robbed him in a certain way. And the police have a duty to determine if that description is identifiable of a perpetrator. It's what John Smith said, right? It's what the victim of the crime said. And the federal government's Bureau of Justice Statistics put out a massive piece of work about 10 months ago that said, once again, the description that victims give of their offenders, A, matches with no mass difference to the victim's perpetrator finally identified. Here, I mean, it's like this isn't a hard concept. This is not difficult. But what we spend a lot of time thinking about is people being in jail who shouldn't be in jail, and I don't want to be in jail any longer or ever, right? Neither do you. But that has overshadowed in many conversations the simple point. People being victimized that are losing their life or the use of their limbs, this isn't something that's very hard to debate. There is no debate. You have to follow up. You have to arrest them, and you have to hold them accountable. Period. The end. That's the difference between a government that can function and people who can live in the government and go to school and enjoy a business and create a tax base that creates the distribution of resources so that people who need help from the government with food, with education, with childcare can have it. The whole thing falls apart if you're not safe and all those other things fail to exist.
What do you say to folks that say, well, you know, because what I hear from the social justice warriors all the time is that, well, you know, what we're doing is not working. We've been doing this. We've been doing this. We've been doing this. But when I think back to the omnibus crime bill in the early 1990s, and I look graphically at as to what crime has done, with some few exception years, it's dropped every year.
Something was being done. And guess what else has happened during the last 10 years or so? The rate of incarceration has gone down. I think police were able to more accurately identify violent offenders with the advancements of technology that has the potential of being less biased, right? A TV camera is not biased. DNA is not biased. Videos from phones is not biased. Doesn't mean it couldn't be used biasly, but the DNA is what it is. So I think we've seen, 30 or 40 years of reducing crime, which means it had to be more than just a momentary idea. B, we're seeing a declining in the rates of which people are being incarcerated, and it's usually around for the regulatory crimes. And C, greater technology has made the police and prosecutors more unbiased, if you will, because DNA is what it is. If that DNA said it was you, you have to explain why you were there. If the videos that everybody posts, Instagram, TikTok, et cetera, show someone who committed a robbery holding a gun, taking a picture of themselves 10 minutes before they conduct the robbery, well, how is that not something that's valuable for police and prosecutors? Of course it is. So the social justice movement, which I believe a lot of, is well-placed. But it has nothing to do with this notion of violent crime in my mind. Violent crime is a whole different set of circumstances.
How do they square up? I mean, you say, you know, it's well played. I don't know that I would go that far, because it seems to me that they want to be a disruptor to the traditional notion of deterrence, which is the fear of apprehension and detention. And they're saying that doesn't work any longer. And my immediate response is, then why is everybody running from the police when they get caught?
Well, I meant to say, if I said it wrong, I should have said it's well-placed. Their intentions are well-placed.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I think as, you know, I think as Dave Chappelle has often said in his comedy, well, we're both there, you know. It's a good thing we're not doing a video because I don't look like I did when you and I were working together. Matter of fact, people don't even confuse me with you anymore, which is very disappointing. Makes me very sad. But, you know, Dave Chappelle's a funny guy. Observational comedians are very funny. And he says, look, folks, you better take your chips because you're about to crap out. People want change that's positive that impacts the criminal justice system. What they don't want is the ignoring of the obvious. Wait a minute. Carjackings are up 2 years in a row in New Orleans. What does that have to do with the other thing? You know, there's just so much at play here that revolves around keeping a clear head. And as, you know, Mayor Landrieu said and Mayor Purcell and everybody I ever worked for, these aren't new sentences. We have to walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, and we can do both and we should be able to do both. But I think far more attention is on the first, which is dealing with the issues that are ignoring, if you will, violent crime, violent victimization, and the impact on people in their lives.
Yeah, you know, I was reading the story of this officer that was shot and killed begging for her life.
Oh, I read that.
This morning, and just right before I got on air, they released the criminal history of the perpetrator. And it was just classic, you know, start with petty theft, move to possess firearm, then we're in assault and battery, and the next thing we know, we're shooting and killing a policeman. And, you know, this police officer, they begged for their lives, shot two police officers. One's still alive, one's dead.
It was a lot of music this, thing, right?
We see this pattern here over and over and over again, and we stare the obvious in the face and walk right around it.
I just want to keep saying you and I and people like us have supported meaningful changes in criminal justice systems that were powerful and made sense. But you nor I or anybody like us has ever said, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with violent crime. This has nothing to do with people who are abusing others for their own personal gain. And I just see it as a difference between night and day. And you can have both conversations, but unfortunately, it seems like we're only focusing as much attention on one side. You know, here's the other thing. I worked for three mayors and a governor, right? And not a single one of them ever sent the message that they supported corrupt or incompetent cops. But they sent the message they supported cops. You got that. If you don't have that, it starts to become problematic. From the president on down, people have to believe in the institutions to provide the service that everyone collectively needs.
A lot of recent discussion about broken windows theory. Mm-hmm. You guys had those guys come down, do a lot of, as it relates to your Comstat process and otherwise. Still a place in today's society for that?
Oh, I think we've learned a lot over the last 30 years about broken windows, and that what's really important isn't the broken window from the police's point of view as much anymore as, you know, prevention as opposed to response. Right. And that's a little bit about my opinion. That's a little bit about what broken windows was. It was a singular idea that if the police dealt with the broken windows, it would prevent a problem. But you know, and I know that that has manifested in the last 40 years to the police being designated by their local governments to be the first response to everything that has nothing to do with policing. That's not fixing broken windows. That's spreading out a police department and putting them in no-win situations. And broken windows is often the result of many other systems that crash and fail, not just the police, right? Planes don't fall out of the sky because they lost one system. It's because they lost several. So broken windows, I think, you know, I think Kelling and them and Bratton, Bill Bratton's a very good personal professional friend. I think at the time it was something that made sense, but we all evolved and realized, wait a minute, there's person-based problems, not place-based problems. So let me say it this way. Broken windows is a place-based analysis. Repeat offenders are a person-based analysis, and we need to do both. And for a long time, people thought police only focused on broken windows place-based. But in fact, there was this massive movement behind the scenes. What was the thing JP did that was so successful? Code six.
Yeah, code six.
Right. That was person-based, right? Y'all were looking mm-hmm. at a person. So a lot of attention.
We were looking to identify the impact criminal and selectively incapacitate
them. So broken windows got a lot of coverage, but really police were focusing on individual person problems a lot more and more now than ever before because, doesn't it make sense? You're not going to chase 100 people if you know it's only two.
Yeah. So, right, we got to get to a break.
I think play space is taken.
Let's pick up this conversation when we come back. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University. Stay with us, folks.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We are back visiting with Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University. Ron, you and I have not talked about this in a while, the drug culture and the impact on our communities and, more importantly, crime. What do you see happening? I know when you were chief, y'all had a very proactive drug interdiction unit. I'm not so sure that's the case today. Ron? Okay, we may have lost him. We're going to try and get him back on the phone. But the question that I was asking was about the drug culture. In fact, I've got a couple of texts here about any discussion relating crime to the drug war. I think they're intrinsically linked on many fronts. Ron, are you back?
Oh, yeah, somebody touched my mute button. It wasn't me. I don't know who it was. It's very frightening.
and frustrating.
So and embarrassing. So I'm clutching my pearls and flushing right now. Here's what I think we know. The demand for drugs is met by a supply. The drug war, if you actually start looking at the data, was more about a war on crime because so many people used crime to fund their drug purchases, right? I mean, half of marijuana exchanges in goods and services, not money. I'll let you figure out what services are, but we know what goods are. I stole something. Right. So it all comes really to this. The police have a duty and responsibility to bring people into the system around drugs. And then if the system can find alternatives that are better for them, like treatment, well, who would ever be against that? But stealing something from someone to advance a drug business is not the same. And then here's the other thing that a lot of people refuse to accept, but you and I know it to be true. When you're the chief and you're a sheriff and you go into a neighborhood and a grandmother looks you in the eye and says, "My kids can't play in the street. What are you going to do about it?" That's what it boils down to, right? So drugs and all the issues of supply and demand are important and crucial. But at the end of that agreement, when you are in a neighborhood and you can't play with your children in your front yard because of drug dealing, because of gang violence, then aren't the police really just needing to do something about that and hope other actors deal with the other side? There's four simple truths. And I think in New Orleans right now, victims should always be first and foremost. I think Chief Ferguson and the NOPD is doing the very best they can. Reform of nonviolent regulatory crimes is a must, but an unrelenting, focused, and proactive arrest and prosecution of violent offenders is non-negotiable. So if you're in the business of protecting a drug practice, you're probably being violent. That's my experience. likely yours as well. I mean, these are four simple things in the city of New Orleans. It's really simple.
Yeah, I mean, that's a better bet than Secretariat, quite frankly. But it's amazing how we look the other way. I mean, you know, you worked out on the West Coast, and you worked in Washington, I think, where they had already had decriminalized mm-hmm. marijuana at the time. I remember having a conversation. You may have worked with him, Sheriff Pastor. He was in the Tacoma
yes.
area.
Yes, I like him.
Great guy. He had served there a long time. And I
just
asked
retired.
I saw that. And I asked him, I said, how's this decriminalization, you know, they had almost had gone full-blown legalization at the time going for you. He says, not good at all. I said, really? He says, yeah. He goes, I'm now having street battles over marijuana. And I now have organized crime involved in the distribution of marijuana. We did such a great job of taxing it because everybody thought it was going to be the economic largesse, you know, for government budgets and everything else. And now it's cheaper to buy the illicit marijuana than it is to buy the legal marijuana. And now I've got turf wars. He goes, my little sleepy area said ain't so sleepy anymore.
The same thing that came out of California. There was reports in the Los Angeles Times as late as November of this year. And somebody will correct me. The illegal market of marijuana in California, several years after the legalization of it, is 4 to 5 times larger than
yes.
the legal market.
Yeah, I read that article.
Denver, my dear friend, R.C. White, who was the police chief in Denver, went to the Obama administration, went to the Trump administration, and would, if he was still working, go to the Biden administration and say, you're killing me as a local police chief that you don't let the legalized money of a state-approved marijuana trafficking, you won't let that money go into FDIC banks. It makes it even more difficult for me to deal with the people who are selling dope on the street corner because it's another level of incentive for illegal dealing because, like I said, I can't even put the money in a bank. So I think you would agree with me on this. As police officers, our job is to enforce the law that the citizens pass on their own referendum or through their representative democracy in the legislature. If they want to legalize marijuana, fine. But don't say it's going to reduce crime and don't say it's going to eliminate the illegal market because it's just not true.
Yeah.
Final point. Have you ever seen that crazy show on the Discovery Channel where they're still making illicit moonshine?
Sure.
I called my friend who's the chief of the Tennessee police. I said, dude, it's on TV. They're doing it in the foothills. It's right here. So it's always been a false belief that legalizing a substance that people want is going to stop the illegal selling of it because it's always going to be sold cheaper. Your point.
Yeah.
Pastor's point.
Yep.
It's just if the government's selling it for $10 an ounce, I'm going to sell it for $6.
No doubt.
Why not? Yeah.
And will be probably more pure as well, but subject for
another
day.
They've got a problem in California. They got a problem in California with this too, because African Americans. This news article the LA Times wrote is that African Americans are being disproportionately impacted once again because of the way that law has been enacted. So good intentions don't always result in good results.
No, that's true for sure. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy New Year again. We really appreciate the time you spent with us, and we'll get you back on real soon.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
All righty. It's Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola University, talking about the aspects of crime. And we will be right back after the break. Scoot's up next. We'll see what he's got coming up. We're back, and Scoot joins us. He's up next. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, three parades kick off the carnival season. It's 12th night, and January the 6th, anybody who grew up here knows that January the 6th is King's Day. It's the official beginning of Mardi Gras. And today, Mayor LaToya Cantrell declared Mardi Gras 2022 will happen, so that should ease any doubts that it was going to happen. However, we now set a single day of COVID cases, a record for a single day of COVID cases at over 14,000. And the state has a positivity rate of over 20%. So none of that is good, but the severity of whatever it is that we're dealing with, including what I dealt with, the severity of it just doesn't seem to be as dangerous as it was before. So that is good news, and maybe this is the beginning of herd immunity.
You have your king cake today?
No, I don't. I'll have to go out and grab one. Now, do you like the regular king cakes or the ones that have filling in them?
You know what? I like the old McKenzie kind of brioche roll.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I remember that. Now, you know, I like the filling stuff.
The truth is, I like them all.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah. I mean, it's like they're not bad. None of them are bad. It's like, which one do you like better? But, yeah, it's King's Day. We're also going to talk about the other thing that is being recognized today on January the 6th, which I'd rather not talk about, but we can't avoid it, so we will touch on that this afternoon.
All righty, stay tuned. Scoot's up next, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We have a great Thursday evening. We'll see you again in the morning.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.